And we'll be back with Dane Wigington as we take your phone calls. He was also talking about the high mercury content in these sprays. We'll get into that, too, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Dane Wigington with us. Dane, you were talking before the break about some of the substances, specifically mercury, that's in the, some of these sprays. I'll let you go back and elaborate on that.
Thanks, George. Actually, if I could clarify, mercury not an element that we know to be involved with climate engineering, but we know mercury's in the air from the coal-fired plants all over the globe. Mm-hmm. It's in our teeth from amalgam fillings. We know we have mercury in us. Aluminum, barium, strontium, all elements that we know are in climate engineering patents in the spray dispersions, in our lab tests on the ground and in the air. So when you mix these metals together, in the case of mercury and aluminum, again, now we have both of these metals in us, all of us, this, the overall toxicity, George, goes up as much as 10,000%, 100 times worse when you mix these two metals together. Each allows the other to cross the blood-brain barrier. The particulates are so small, nanoparticulates from 20 to 80 nanometers enter right through the olfactory nerve in the nose, straight into your bloodstream. We are breathing this in. It's not speculation. George, you know Alzheimer's and dementia is the number one cause of death now in the UK. It's extraordinarily high in the US. We would expect to see this. We are seeing it. And when we try to get this kind of data out, something I wanted to mention as far as the censorship goes, geoengineeringwatch.org, because of 35 million visitors, was the number one top of the page for a search of the geoengineering term. About 6 months ago, overnight, Google completely deleted us from a search of the geoengineering term. Gone.
Really?
From top of the first page, if you search Bing or DuckDuckGo, if you search the geoengineering term, we are still the top of the first page because our rankings dictate that. Google completely deleted our site from a search of the geoengineering term. So we are being heavily censored. And again, back to the overall premise of all this, George, the condensation trail narrative lie. One more extraordinarily important point, if I may mention. People need to understand that all commercial aircraft, all military tankers are fitted with what's called a high bypass turbofan jet engine. It's a jet-powered fan. 90% of the air that moves through that engine is non-combusted. By design, it's nearly incapable of producing a condensation trail except under rare circumstances. Important people understand that.
This is an amazing topic, Dane. I mean, what was it that captured your attention years ago?
Well, my background in solar, and again, my off-grid solar home, I expected clean air in Northern California. I began to lose extreme amounts of solar photovoltaic power uptake from whatever these aircraft were emitting, which certainly could not be condensation. I was losing 60, 70, 80% of my solar power on some days when the dispersions were extremely heavy, and it simply can't be condensation. I began to research the climate engineering issue, the elements, tested my precipitation, did not want to find what I found. The levels of aluminum and other elements continued to skyrocket. And George, on the aluminum issue, which, again, everyone knows, I think, how toxic that is, if they search Dane Wigington, Dr. David Keith, the most recognized climate engineer on the planet from Harvard, and they can see me confronting him at an international climate engineering conference after he proposed the dumping of 10 million tons of aluminum into the atmosphere annually. I mean, think about that, 10 million tons of these nanoparticulates. And I was able to get him to answer, had any environmental toxicity studies been done, human health toxicity, and after he fumbled around for an answer, his final answer was no, they hadn't studied any of that, and he said, quote, could terrible things happen tomorrow, we don't know. And your listeners can see that if they Google my name and his, Dane Wigington, David Keith, they can watch that short exchange on the record. I was banned from the conferences after that.
They didn't want anything to do with you, did they?
Well, the bottom line is they don't want to answer that kind of question.
Of course not. Yeah. They were embarrassed to.
That was a fortunate exchange, but your listeners can see that themselves.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Jane in Independence, Missouri to get us started. Hello, Jane.
Hi. I have got a Life magazine from August 13th, 1951, and it says what to do about germ warfare on the cover, right above a picture of Martin Lewis. And then it has article Biological Warfare. It's a grim threat, but new microbe detectors offer hope. And it goes on to, and has several pages of what to do, what it is, and what to do about it.
Thank you for bringing that up, Jane. This is absolutely technology that has been around for a very, very long time. And you bring up a great point that magazines then covered more than they do now. So we have original copies of a 1954 Collier's magazine that discusses the weather warfare capability then. We have 1958 Popular Science discussing weather as a weapon then. Your listeners can look at this, George, if they search geoengineeringwatch.org, Collier's magazine, or geoengineeringwatch.org, Popular Science. Full PDFs of the whole magazine articles are there.
It's amazing, too, that magazine came out weekly in those days.
Yep.
Next up, Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hi, Bear.
Hello there, George. Oh, boy, what a great program. And Dane has certainly got some great points.
He does.
Let me say real quick hello to all my buddies and Wayne up there in Tacoma. Give me a call after the show, Wayne. I need to talk to you. But anyway, Cornelius and all my buddies out there in Coast to Coast land, hello. And George, I'm telling you, this guy is so right on. Dane, I'm telling you, there's an average minimum of 5 extinctions of different plants and animals on Earth every day. That's 1,800 species a year. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it's escalating. And you are so right on with these chemicals that are being sprayed in the air. George knows I've got a biological chemistry background, and it's horrifying. I'm glad I'm 77 instead of 17 years old, so I don't have to go through living again.
If I could correct one, that figure, and thank you for fortifying the fact that we are in true peril. Although some sources would have us try to believe that that is the extinction rate, the current statistical extinction rate is 200 to 300 species of plant, animal, and insect a day. 200 to 300. That is the current rate. Encourage your listeners to look up everything I state again. But that is the current rate. 15,000 times the background rate, 1.5% of normal. 200 to 300 a day are going extinct.
How often are they spraying, Dane, in your opinion?
Well, certainly globally, the spraying is constant. We have a geoengineeringwatch.org Facebook photo gallery page with photos from all over the globe every day. So it's a matter of how much resources they have. I mean, this is a climate engineering Manhattan project. So we will see concentrated efforts in different regions as when they engineer the type of snowstorms. I mean, they seem to be planning one of those for the East Coast for next week. So it just depends on where their priorities are. But, George, if we look at NASA satellite images of the planet compared to initial images from the late 60s, for example, compared to today, it looks like a completely different planet. No organized weather systems as we saw in the early photos, just simply drifting masses of aerosolized cloud cover. It looks like a completely different planet.
It looks clean, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. It depends on how we define that. We simply see a lot more disorganized cloud cover on the planet. It does not look anything like it did in, half a century back.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
More natural a long time ago.
Yes, 50 years ago, yes.
Brian in Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hello, Brian.
Hey, George, good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful, thanks.
Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning here, Dane. Good topic. Hey, listen, I went from the night shift to the day shift. And by the way, George, how about that present me and wife Chris sent you?
That was a gorgeous alien.
Man, no doubt. We it took us a while to find something that we thought you guys would appreciate.
It's great. We've got it in Tommy's big office peering down on us.
Cool. Hey, listen, but I went from nights to days. And I live out in the country now because I moved south of Indianapolis. And me and the wife, we have a hot tub with the house that we bought now. And when we sit out there in the morning, early morning, we watch these chemtrails, these planes, 4, 5, 6, 7 at a time. They go different directions, and you can see they go up underneath each other. They change, from left to right to left and everything. We were just wondering, is there any kind of set pattern that they do, or is there any kind of, or they just go out and start spraying? I mean, it happens, and this is in the western sky. Now, here at work, I can see the eastern sky, and I mean, it's a daily occurrence. I got pictures. I've sent pictures of Tommy. I've got video. I mean, it's amazing. If you just look up and pay attention, you'd be surprised at what you see.
Yeah, is there a method to the madness out there, Dane?
Brian, to answer your question, the spraying trajectories correlate with systems, weather systems, and with objectives. So we often see, of course, the dispersions. They're not flying on normal flight paths, but again, from one scenario to another, it can still vary considerably. And we can't really establish specific patterns because the weather patterns are changing. And also, George, in regard to the weather patterns, and Brian, in the upper level wind currents, as they're ionizing the atmosphere, again, making it more electrically conductive because these particles are electrically conductive, that also helps to facilitate another important aspect of climate engineering, which is the radio frequency microwave transmissions from installations like HARP. Your listeners probably know what that is. It's a ground-based...
Oh, sure. Nick Begich has been on a lot talking about that.
Nick's really the expert on that. But the ground-based radio frequency microwave transmissions can cause those particles to repel. So if you conceptualize that, as they disperse these particles, it can help to scatter them over a much broader area. And that's a primary aspect of climate engineering. So we have that to add to it as well. And the ionosphere heaters, which... this is not disputed on the record, can cause an electrical chain reaction in the ionosphere, creates a bulge in that layer of the atmosphere, which pushes down as well as up. They can create pressure zones in the upper atmosphere, and that helps to steer upper-level wind currents, and that helps them to manipulate storm systems in the manner that they want. So, I mean, this technology is as astounding as it may sound, and many deny that this is possible. I'm simply asking them to do the research because everything I'm stating is indisputable if the data is examined.
We've got Every in West Plains, Missouri, first-time caller. Hi, Ev, go ahead.
Well, hello, George. I want to thank you so much for carrying the torch for Art Bell.
Thank you. It's been my honor.
The time when the Oklahoma City bombing took place. Yeah. And I got three questions for Dane. And Dane, I've been sharing your videos and your information for about 5 years now to get the message out.
Thank you.
And thanks to your comprehensive work and your efforts, it seems like people are starting to wake up. I also want to say I live in South Central Texas in a suburb south of San Antonio, Texas, from 2005 to 2018, and the skies were continually filled with chemtrails every day down there, and you rarely ever saw a blue sky. And where I live now, here in Missouri, it's nowhere near a metropolitan or any major metropolitan city, so we don't see the chemtrails here as often. Mostly we see them right before they forecast rain. Whenever there's a forecast for rain coming, the day before, man, they really start filling up the skies. But we're starting to see a little bit more of an increase on it now.
You're exactly right with that observation, by the way. That's in front of an incoming system, you have typically an AR, an atmospheric river of moisture that's conducive for their spraying, and your observations are exactly on target with that. And as far as people beginning to wake up, I'm encouraged to hear that. We're hearing it from other locations, too, and I want to thank you because it's a team effort for this to happen. Without individuals like you that are helping to disseminate that data and to get it into the hands of people who wouldn't know otherwise, this battle is definitely a team effort, so thank you.
You're welcome. And, I know you were talking about, you and George were talking about, this goes back like 80 years. I remember when we used to watch the shows on TV back in the 70s, because I grew up in the 70s, I'm 60 years old, and there's a program called MeTV, and they have those reruns, and one day I was watching one of the reruns, and there was an outdoor scene, and I actually saw a chemtrail, and that would have been from back in the 70s, and I was like, oh my gosh, they were spraying it back in the 70s? That was a chemtrail I just saw, so I was kind of like, whoa. So that was kind of a eye-opener for me as far as how far back this goes.
The data corroborates that. No question, the programs were launched at scale immediately after World War II, focusing on the polar regions initially, and it had a profound effect initially. George, you remember the talk of a, quote, potential coming ice age in the 70s and that type of...
Oh, sure. Cooling. Yep.
So we had the climate science community that was not aware that this was going on, and that the initial deployment of climate engineering did have a statistical cooling effect. And so without the climate science community knowing what was affecting the equation, you had some data put out that was not accurate. But as the negative effects kicked in, they simply keep ramping the programs up more and more and more, George. It's much like a drug addict. Once the drug is no longer effective, they just take more. And as the damage mounts, they just keep doubling down.
Yep. Ivry, any more questions?
I do. I'm just wondering about the defense energy weapons. You know, well, we've seen some of those on the videos in California and Australia. And also, President Trump had said he's going to end this. I saw something on that he's going to try to end it. And one of the questions was, are they increasing the spraying at this time? And the last one is, could this possibly be the biblical prophecy of the earth ending in fire? Those are my questions.
Well, certainly it's a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point. As far as President Trump, there's no question that his administration was informed. There was a meeting held at a U.S. Air Force general's home in January of 2016, specifically to address this issue. Carson's campaign people were there as well, and they were given data that was supplied by geoengineeringwatch.org. So there's no question they know, and the scale of the programs is only increasing, and we have seen no definitive data that this was addressed in any manner by the president. So, again, while people are caught up with political theater and the orchestrated impeachment theater, the planet's life support systems are dying by the day.
Too fast.
Blinding speed.
All right. Thanks, Eve.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. Wayne in Chicago. Take it away, Wayno.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Wayne.
Yes. Hi. How you doing? I know we're coming to the bottom of the hour. You know, I don't think people really understand what Dane is saying. What Dane just said a few minutes ago, if within 5 years, ozone layer will be gone completely. Now, Dane, how long can we last after that? And also, people are asking who's behind it. I said it's the same people that put up the Georgia Guidestones, the same people that are stealing trillions of dollars to build cities on the ground. You can kill a billion people without firing a shot. And also, Dane, why are they cooling the lower 48 states, the eastern half of the United States also?
Wayne, I'm with you on all counts. Thank you for pointing those conclusions out. Those are statistically verifiable on the current course. So thank you for bringing that attention again. The cooling of the eastern half of the U.S. lower 48, which, again, we know is directly related to climate engineering operations. We can see it happening on satellite imagery. And we have the data to show this consistent cooling off for the last 5 years, because that keeps the most densely populated portions of the U.S. and the United States being the most potentially counterbalancing force on the planet if the population woke up to this. But that keeps the largest and most populated sections of the U.S., keeps those populations confused and divided as to the true state of climate meltdown. They don't understand the severity of it. When it's cold outside your door, it's hard to imagine how hot it is everywhere else. So that's really part of the psychological operations of that. And, George, you remember in 2014, remember all the headlines on the Boston snow? Remember that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Plus, if the ozone layer went, the increases of skin cancer will zoom. We'll be back with final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And George Norrie back with Dane Wigington as we talk about geoengineering and climate engineering as well. It's amazing. Don't they realize they're also doing it to themselves, Dane?
Well, certainly that question is one that many people ask. And what I would say is this is, you know, does an addict realize they're killing themselves when they continue with their habit? And what addiction is more profound than the addiction to power, George? And what else are they doing to themselves? They've detonated 2,000 nuclear bombs all over the globe that contaminated every living organism on the planet. We have Fukushima that may be an extinction-level event by itself. No technology to fix it, no end in sight. They're building 60 more nuke plants right now. So I would argue again that we're not dealing with sanity. We're not dealing with individuals that think in any sense on the long-term horizon. And quite simply, we have many examples of what they've already done to themselves. So the equation is clear.
To the phones we go. Wayne is truck driving in Indiana. Welcome to the show. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. With everything going on way up in the atmosphere, everybody knows that car fumes and truck exhausts and everything are bad for you. Is there any correlation that what we put out down here, especially in diesels, because of the new diesel exhaust fluid, that it is having an effect sort of the same way at a lower level?
Oh, that's a great question, Wayne. And one thing in the diesel exhaust fluid is urea. You know that, correct? And We know that urea, synthetic urea, is in climate engineering chemical ice nucleating patents. So it's an interesting correlation you make. Are the emissions from other sources of human activity, vehicles, factories, is that a part of the equation for what's happening to climate? Certainly. Again, every form of human activity that alters the Earth's natural processes or the Earth's natural energy equilibrium is a form of geoengineering. But the intentional attempt to derail these systems is the biggest factor of all. But your question is very valid, and on the subject of urea, again, especially synthetic urea, which is what the new diesel fluids are, yes, we are trying to connect those dots, because it is certainly something we're finding in the sampling of frozen precipitation, like the ice storms and so forth. Wayne, if you're a truck driver, you know how many ice storms there are now, right?
Too many.
We have storms being fed with moisture right out of the Gulf of Mexico. Since when did winter storms originate from the Gulf of Mexico? They're chemically nucleating this moisture. They need a lot of moisture to do this. And so you have ice storm transition zones as this nucleated material is hitting the ground and setting up before it forms a, quote, snowflake, which looks nothing like a historically nucleated snowflake. It was big balls of cotton-looking snowfalls at above normal or above freezing temperatures. So very, very different. I don't think anybody can argue the weather is completely different than what it once was.
Why are these storms so violent and so intense these days?
Well, it depends on where. For example, in Northern California, our storms are not violent at all. In fact, where we live, they're very non-events compared to 15 years ago. So it depends on where it's at. Now, on the nucleating process, George, we're seeing more intense low-pressure zones, the bomb cyclones that now we hear about that we never heard about 10 years ago. The term didn't even exist. So we have the bomb cyclones, and it appears now because the atmosphere is warming so much that wind energy is needed to carry the particulates and the ice nucleating materials far enough to help further the what's called an endothermic reaction, an energy-absorbing reaction. So, yes, we are seeing what appears to be an attempt to make these circulations more intense, and that seems to be a desperate attempt to carry out the engineered winter events. And your listeners can search the engineering winter section at geoengineeringwatch.org and learn all about this.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Walter in Pennsylvania. Hello, Walt.
Hi, George.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah, about a week ago, you had Dr. Tim Ball on, and needless to say, I think he was the direct opposite of what Dane has been saying. Now, George, I think neither Dr. Ball or Dane is 100% correct. I think, as I said last week, I think mankind is conducting an open-ended experiment with this planet, and sadly, we are using ourselves as the guinea pigs. Now, I think it's just common sense. I think that Dane would agree that the human population of this planet cannot increase ad infinitum, as Dr. Tim Ball made the statement when you had him on about a year ago, that he believes that the Earth can safely sustain 28 billion people, which I think is a preposterous notion. So I think Dane...
I was going to state on Dr. Ball, if we can ever get him to actually engage in an equal time debate, fact for fact, on the air, which he has repeatedly refused to do with me, despite being invited from a number of national radio show hosts. So perhaps at some point he will agree to such an exchange, and we'll ferret out who has their facts right.
You both talk about climate engineering, though. You both come to that understanding. Where do you two differ?
I don't, to my knowledge, I haven't heard Tim Ball state that. Maybe he has now.
No, he is. He has.
Well, where we differ, George, is the notion that human activity is not warming the planet. And again, we have statistically, and I'm not an Al Gore fan. Carbon credits are a sham. The environmental groups are behaving like complete hypocrites in their total denial of climate engineering, because they don't want to lose their 501 nonprofits. And we know that because our attorneys have spoken to their attorneys. But as far as this notion that there's nothing to worry about, the planet's not warming or not warming catastrophically, I mean, statistically, the data's overwhelming. I mean, we are on track for what's called Venus syndrome. And so these narratives by a certain select few individuals, Lord Christopher Monckton also being one, it simply does not hold up to the data. And I would welcome an equal time moderated on-air debate with any of these individuals, and all of them, Monckton, Ball, have all repeatedly refused to engage in such a fact-finding debate on air with me.
Interesting. That would be a great debate. Maybe we can see if we can pull that together.
I'll show up for my part.
Let us go next to Bill in the state of Washington. Hello, William. Go ahead.
Hey, Dane. Hey, George. I was I'm reading this book called The Sixth Extinction, and there's an opening quote from Professor E.O. Wilson, who's an eminent biologist and naturalist. He's an American, but when you're talking, you make me think of that quote. He's talking about the irony of organic evolution, and he says that life, at the instant of achieving self-understanding through the mind of man, also doomed some of its most beautiful creatures, or creations. And I can't help but wonder if, you know, Homo sapien, the great tool maker, all right, if we're not just going to make, you know, build ourselves into oblivion.
Well, again, I mean, those are great questions. And statistically speaking, on the current course, we face certain near-term planetary omnicide. That's a mathematical, statistical fact. So, and on your question, it's very profound also in that if we look at all other species on the planet, they work symbiotically for the overall good, for the equilibrium of the planet. The only one that doesn't is us. So that certainly fits with that equation.
Let's go to Lori in Redding, California, west of the Rockies. Hello, Lori. Go ahead.
Hello, George. I wanted to thank you so much the other night. You were sharing very profoundly about how you kind of informed your dad that you weren't really going to follow through on the family dental.
Oh, yeah.
That was so touching, George, because there's a lot of people that need to really make their own decisions, and this fits tonight's topic. If there's people that have, you know, their family members that want to join the military and they're very, you know, concerned about that, or their babies are going to be vaccinated. There's so much controversy and challenges that to have you share that was really important. And I thank your whole team, Lisa and Tommy. You've got a great team, George.
We sure do. Thank you.
You sure do. If I can mention 2 points quickly. We are facing here in the West Coast possibly round two of more of these catastrophic fires, the firenados, and all the rest. So we're kind of bracing ourselves emotionally as we watch our friends in Australia in their third to fourth month of this disaster, and how people are, and this is where maybe Dan could mention, how they're using, oh, they're arsonists, or they're the homeless people, transient people that are just trying to keep warm, or it's the bark beetles, or there's it's poor fuel management of the forest, or PG&E. There's all these people and entities to blame, but they're not addressing what Dane has been suggesting for the longest time, is the geoengineering factor that puts all of these things into place so you can blame, quote-unquote, nature. Time permitting, Dane, if you can mention what's going on with the zip-lipped silent cowards like the faith-based churches or the environmental groups, mainstream media. I know we've got a few people that have billboards out there, but you've done 233 shows of Global Alert News, so wherever you want to go, I just really appreciate your fortitude, Dane. You're awesome.
Thank you, Lori. If I could, I'll answer very quickly, George, what Lori stated. The cause of ignition for these fires is a separate subject completely, and we can speculate on those causes of ignition, but the fact that climate engineering is setting the template for this to happen is absolutely indisputable, and the level of burn downs, if we look at the Siberian forest, George, when they blame this on excess fuel loading because we're not cutting down enough trees, that is patently false. Forests in Siberia that haven't been touched for hundreds of thousands of years, in the last 10 years from 2000 to 2010, fire burn rate went up 1,000%.
Wow.
So, again, untouched forests, rate changed dramatically over what they'd been for hundreds of thousands of years. So, quite simply, there's a factor that we're not being told about, and that factor is climate engineering.
That much percent? That's huge.
1,000%, 10 times more.
We've got Mike in Clarkston, Georgia. Welcome to the program, Mike. Go ahead.
Good morning, George and Dane. How you doing?
Morning. Good.
You were talking about walking out the door and it's cold outside and you don't think about the heat anywhere else. When we had our huge freeze, the first freeze, it was either November or December here in the country. That was when Australia started having their triple-digit heat wave, and that was before all the fires down there. you were talking about Tennessee, some issues in Tennessee. I was wondering if you did any work in southwest North Carolina.
There's we should be capturing
there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Chattanooga. And it kind of, because of the mountains and the bowl that it creates, it kind of has its own weather to start with.
What we recorded over Tennessee was three C-17 Globemasters, U.S. military aircraft, and they were massive spray dispersions flying in formations, and your listeners can look at that on the homepage of geologywatch.org. And to also reiterate what Lori Stead said before, it appears from what we know as the schedule weather that comes through NOAA that's created ultimately by Raytheon, it appears that the schedule weather at this point is that they're again going to set the template for massive northern hemisphere burndowns again once summer comes to this direction. So there's a number of reasons why we feel that they're facilitating this. And your listeners can learn about that, George, under the Engineering Wildfire section at geoengineeringwatch.org.
Geoengineeringwatch.org, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Sophie's with us in L.A. Hey, Sophie, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Dane. Thank you for taking the call. This is a very sad information, and I just, well, I want to make a comment and then a question, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay.
I just, you know, I've had health issues over the last 5 years that I never had before. And one of the things that came up in my blood test was aluminum, which doesn't make sense. I don't drink a lot of sodas out of cans or anything. And then just the huge rate of cancer that we've had in the last decade or two. I wonder if it has anything to do with what you're talking about. And then my questions is there any hope, and what can we do about it? And I'll take my answer up here.
Thank you, Sophie. That's the most important question of all. Is there any chance we will know the planet we have once known? Statistically, mathematically, no. That planet is gone. The equilibrium periods after former such events that happened, again, at a fraction of the speed. This is happening at equilibrium periods of 10 to 20 million years. The planet we've known, the hospitable planet we've known, is done. Can we salvage any part of Earth's life support systems? That remains to be seen, and that depends on what we collectively do or don't do. And I would encourage people, one quick statement, George, to use the science terms when they're conveying this issue to someone else. Avoid the chemtrails term unless you're talking amongst friends. That term leads straight to conspiracy theory and hoax. Use climate engineering, geoengineering, solar radiation management, and pass on credible printed data. We do offer that at geoengineeringwatch.org on our homepage. Very compelling printed data at our approximate cost of producing and shipping that's much more effective to waking others. If we can bring this issue to the full light of day, wake our military brothers and sisters up as to what they're participating in, we have a chance of exposing and stopping these programs. If we can do that, we'll have taken a quantum leap in the right direction.
Do they ever have any revolts from the pilots, let's say, assuming they're not drones?
None we know of, except for perhaps, let's think about the aircraft that mysteriously just went missing, what 2 or 3 years ago, that took them how many, a month to find, that, you know, they just, as if they don't know where these aircraft are with transponders. Was that some sort of defection? We don't know. We certainly don't know that. And, you know, I'm sure that anybody in that kind of position to know what they're doing would be monitored to an incredible level. We are communicating with some commercial aircraft pilots. Off the record, they absolutely know this is going on. They're leaving our materials around in pilot lunchrooms and so forth.
Well, they see it. They see it happening.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We got a call from two Gulfstream pilots, you know, the Gulfstream private aircraft. They fly very important people. These aircraft, the temperatures were so hot above 40,000 feet, they're nearly 40 degrees above normal. The air couldn't carry the aircraft. They went into forced automatic pilot descents. These guys were extremely alarmed. You know, they can't hide this elephant in the sky much longer, George. We need everybody to help us bring this to light. It is the priority, the battle we must win, or all is lost.
All right, my friend. Dane, keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you so much for your voice in this battle, George.
Absolutely. We will continue to be one of the champions to get this done. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottisores, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.